and welcome to the PureMed podcast special series, Behind Diagnoses Patients. My name is Leah Sarah Pure, and I am your host. Behind Diagnoses Patients aims to uplift patient voices to share their insight and experiences navigating the healthcare system. It welcomes everyone from patient advocates, the chronically ill, the disabled, and those with rare diseases to offer suggestions for a more equitable world. On this episode, I'm pleased to welcome Misha Malone King, also known as Harley Quinn, a wife, a mother, and a patient advocate for mental health and chronic illness. She has been a Crohn's disease and colitis warrior since 2009, a task force member of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, a WeGo Health Awards finalist of 2019, a WeGo Health 2020 Top 10 Rookie of the Year, and a person who battles bipolar disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, and diverticulitis all at the same time. Today, Misha, we are here for you to tell your story in a way that communicates the good and the bad of our healthcare system, your concerns and suggestions for a more equitable world. So I'd like for you to take it away and tell us about yourself, your story, and what inspired you to become a powerful patient advocate.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Maisha. I am the face behind Game of Crohn's and Chronic Illness. My disease subtype, I have Crohn's disease, which is a part of inflammatory bowel disease. No way in any part is it irritable bowel syndrome. My diagnosis story is a little bit of an odd one. I first started having symptoms when I was pregnant with my now 12-year-old son, and I almost died from bleeding to death. So I noticed symptoms, I want to say around about my seventh month of pregnancy. And I noticed that I was, you know, getting fatigued. I wasn't putting weight on like I should be. I kept having frequent bathroom trips, but I didn't think nothing of it. I just figured I ate something, you know, it just wasn't agreeing with me. And this went on for about a year. I would bring it up to my doctor, but they was like, you know, that's normal. It could be your medication. They just pretty much just brushed me off. So at this point, I started seeing significant amounts of blood and when I used the bathroom. So I was telling my now husband, I'm like, you know, something ain't right. Like I'm bleeding and I'm having like this abdominal pain. And I'm like, you know, something's just not right. So I go back and forth to the emergency room. You know, they did test. They wasn't really trying to check me because I was, you know, pregnant. And the hospital that is 5 minutes away from my house doesn't see pregnant people because they have no they don't have labor and delivery. So I'm like, you know, you just can't turn me away. I'm like, you know, my pain level is like a 20. You know, something is wrong. Something's going on with me. They were like, well, you know, just follow up with your OB doctor, you know, bring it to them. So one morning of May the 11th, I wake up, use the bathroom. I stand up because my water never broke. So I stood up and it was blood all over the bathroom floor. I ran and woke my mother-in-law up and I'm like, you know, I think my water just broke. And she was like, well, did it look like water? I'm like, no, it was blood. And she was like, well, that's not normal. You need to go to the hospital. So we called the ambulance and we go to University of Maryland Medical Center. And, you know, they check me in and they check my cervix and they like, you know, your cervix is thin like paper, you know, something's going on. So they prep me for labor and delivery. And they like, you know, we can't leave the baby in you because obviously something is going wrong. So I had my oldest son who is 12 now at 37 and a half weeks. And after I delivered him, I just could not stop bleeding. They couldn't find the source of where the blood was coming from. My heart rate kept dropping. My blood pressure was dropping. So after they managed to get, you know, me stable, get my blood under control, you know, the next day come, which is May the 12th. So they did some test results and they sent me for ultrasound. I got an intravenous ultrasound. I got an MRI, I got a CAT scan with and without contrast, and they seen that three inches of my colon was actually corroded. So they rushed me into emergency surgery to, you know, remove that three inches because they couldn't leave it in me. And, you know, they reattached it, you know, I had to get blood and iron. And they told me, you know, once I was stable enough, they was like, you know, if you get pregnant again, you know, it's going to kill you. And I was like, well, you know, what's going to kill me? Like what's going on? But they still have yet to tell me exactly what was going on. They were like, you know, we made your appointment to see a gastroenterologist. And this appointment was like 3 months away. And I had my son in May. And it was like 3 months after that. I'm still going back and forth to the emergency room, still crying, still in pain. So the very last time I went to the emergency room, they were like, you know, we're going to keep you. And they did extensive tests. And at this time, I didn't have insurance either. So the doctor, the gastroenterologist was still seeing me and he didn't charge me not a dime. Even to this day, he didn't charge me not a dime because he said he wanted to find out what was going on. So when they finally diagnosed me, they diagnosed me with ulcerative proctitis. They had gave me some medicine called Pentasa and they had put me on prednisone and told me to take that. But my symptoms were still going on. Nothing was working. So by this time, I'm back seeing the gastroenterologist, you know, and he's like, you know, I want to do a colonoscopy because your symptoms, you know, even though, you know, we said you have ulcerative colitis, I'm pretty sure that you have Crohn's disease. So we do the colonoscopy. And when I come, you know, from under, they told me that I had a condition called diverticulitis. And where they saying the inflammation in my colon was significant for Crohn's disease, but he didn't want to just diagnose me with that. So we waited for pathology to come back, which took about 3 to 5 days. And when pathology came back, it said that my colon was diagnosis inflammatory bowel disease, subtype Crohn's disease. And then it also said that I had diverticulitis as well as gastritis and irritable bowel syndrome. So after that, you know, I didn't know too much about inflammatory bowel disease. The doctor, the gastroenterologist didn't tell me too much about inflammatory bowel disease. So everything that I know now, I learned from other advocates like Sarah Ringer and Amber Tresca about IBD, Crazy Cruel Mommies, you know, just on YouTube alone, Ostomy Diaries, just looking for any information I can find about inflammatory bowel disease. Because obviously I was going to have this condition for the rest of my life and I knew nothing. So people directed me to the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. They like, you know, you can find positive information here. So as I'm doing this, I'm constantly keeping up with these other advocates that's walling me. Like they're living with these conditions. They're doing amazing, you know. But all of us shed, you know, inflammatory bowel disease, but each of us had different symptoms because no one case is exactly alike. So as I'm seeing these advocates advocating not just for themselves, but, you know, others and making sure accurate information was out there, I wanted to be like them. I wanted to do what they were doing because to me, that was something positive that I needed. And I felt as though that, you know, if they shared their story, maybe I should share mine. But I wasn't at that point yet where I felt comfortable enough, you know, telling somebody that I had a condition that dealt with me using the bathroom. So one day, you know, my husband, he was like, you know, why don't you start a Facebook group? He was like, you know, you might find other people like you. He was like, just start one. He was like, you know, it might help you. He was like, even though I know what you're going through, he was like, I don't physically have, you know, Crohn's disease or inflammatory bowel disease. So maybe others, or you hearing other story or just interacting and reaching out to others might help you. So my husband is the reason that I became an advocate, and the reason behind the name Game of Crohn's and Chronic Illness. My support system, my husband, my kids, my sisters, my close friends are just amazing. And I decided to share my story one day. And I started getting different friend requests from, you know, others that had inflammatory bowel disease. And I had joined this group called IBD Journeys. And, you know, it was so many people in there that was just like me, sharing their stories, sharing, you know, their trial and error with doctors, what was going on. And I was just beyond amazed that I wasn't the only one. I wasn't the only one that was suffering or dealing with, you know, this disease. It was others like me. I knew that I wasn't a hypochondriac and I wasn't making none of this stuff up. It was just more refreshing to know that I was not alone. So I started advocating and sharing my story and reaching out and helping others that were just like me, that maybe just wasn't there with sharing their story either. So I felt as though, you know, if I share my story and it helped at least just one person, or make that one person that's not comfortable with sharing their story feel less alone, I was okay with that. I was okay with helping someone not feel as alone as I felt when I was diagnosed, because I knew nothing. I knew absolutely nothing. So right now I'm at a place where my goal is to branch off and just do everything I can in any way, if that's, you know, working with another advocate, or just helping get more stories out there, or just, you know, trying to be a support system and a comfort for someone, just to be able to listen to somebody else's story. I feel content with that. I feel as though that, you know, these past 12 years, I was meant to be an advocate. I'm exactly where I was meant to be, even though it took me a long time to actually get here. And, you know, I was just doing advocacy, you know, all throughout. And in 2019, the people that I was helping nominated me for the WeGo Health Awards. And I became a finalist that year. And it had amazed me, because I'm like, you know, it's people out there that's actually listening to me that thought I was well-deserving to be a finalist out of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, you know, and it showed me that I was making an impact. But to me, I just felt like I could still be doing more. I felt as though, you know, that I can just do more in any way possible. And I started breaking out of my comfort zone. I started doing podcasts, and I started, you know, doing lives to tell my story. I started posting pictures more. I wasn't uncomfortable with sharing the gory sides of inflammatory bowel disease, the blood and the bathroom trips. I was no longer ashamed about that. I felt clear enough to share that stuff, to see the reality, the good, the bad, and the indifferent that comes with any chronic illness. But the bright side too, even though I feel as though I'm diagnosed with this disease, the good things that came from me having this condition far outweighs any condition that I can ever have, because I've made some of the best friends that they're just amazing in the IBD community, and, you know, all the communities as a collective is just simply amazing and so nurturing and caring of one another. It made me feel like I had a place to actually call home. And with me advocating, I felt like I was just where I needed to be. I love advocating. I'm always the first person to say, you know, if somebody asks, you know, can you do this? Or can you take a picture of this? I'm the first person to jump up. I'm like, yeah, I can do that. You know, and I feel as though that, you know, speaking about how I was diagnosed and just being able to help others, it makes me realize, you know, that maybe them just telling me their story, or maybe me just checking on them for that day to say, hey, how are you doing today? You know, it's not always about, you know, I'm sick or I'm not feeling good. Sometimes they just want somebody just to say, how are you doing? You know, just for somebody to reach out and say, hey, you haven't been online in a few days. You know, are you okay? You know, because having any chronic illness really plays with your mental health as well. you know, and it makes you think a lot of different things. Not necessarily that, you know, it's going, you know, what's going on, but it puts you in a, such a depressed state because you're no longer the person that you were before you got sick. You're now living with extra baggage, a chronic illness. So you're now, I'm now Maisha, but I'm also Maisha with Crohn's disease. Like I can't really escape that title because I'm no longer who I was before I got sick. And I went through a really bad, really bad grieving process. I really went through the five stages of grief, but the one that hit me the hardest, what I'll say surviving IBD or survivor's guilt, because I felt as though that I wasn't able to live as freely as I was before I got diagnosed. I felt as though I didn't have any quality of life anymore because I was always sick or sleep or highly medicated. And I felt as though I wasn't able to be the best mom that I could be because I felt as though I had no quality of life. I could no longer go to my kids' games and no longer interact with them like a mom should, you know? I reached 1 year of clinical remission, August the 3rd of this year. But right now, as you say, I'm going through disparities in the community because I'm without my biologic and it been like that for 3 weeks. For some reason, my insurance is requiring a prior authorization every 6 months. And it's just a mess. So right now without my medication and my bathroom trips has increased, but thank goodness there's no blood and nothing like that. And the scary part is that even though I'm in clinical remission, I always have that fear that, you know, if I go to the bathroom this time, I'm going to see something. I'm going to be flaring. And you always have that fear of the what if, or what if what if I do this? And I still pack. So when I go places, I still pack as if I'm having a flare or if I can potentially have a flare. I have a flare kit. I carry baby wipes and, you know, change of clothes and different things of that nature to make me feel less, to make me feel more secure. Because I still have that what if in the back of my mind that, you know, even though I'm in clinical remission, I can still flare at any time because clinical remission or remission in a whole is not a cure. So this is my story. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Maisha, for sharing your story and for being so vulnerable and honest. It takes a lot of bravery and courage to be telling your story, and to be an advocate, it requires a lot of patience, courage, and honesty, all of which you've done an amazing job so far. And I commend you for how far you've come with your story, with your son, with your family battling. And I wish you all the best to take care of yourself, your mental health, and emotional being as well. I have a few questions for you now, Maisha. What matters to you when interacting with healthcare professionals or undergoing invasive exams?
What matters to me is having a doctor that listen, not just listen to what I have to say, but listen to understand my concerns, my needs, my wants, and for us to work together as a team. Because if you have a medical, if you're getting any type of medical treatment or any invasive surgery, you and your medical team should be one and the same. Y'all should have good communication. Y'all should know, you know, the ins and outs of anything that's going on, but y'all should work together as one, far as medication, because you know you best. You know your body better than any doctor possibly can. So you know if something's, you know, gonna work or not work. You know your body. And I think having a one-on-one and a good communicative relationship with your medical team is important.
Well said. And so, Maisha, have you felt that you are not respected or seen as a human being in medicine or accessing healthcare services?
Yes, I was medically gaslighted. A lot of times I was made to think that I was a hypocrite. I'm not a hypocrite, I'm called a hypochondriac a lot of times, because during the time when I was getting diagnosed, a lot of doctors made me think that it was all in my head. And I knew for a fact that something was wrong. One thing I knew for sure is that I was not supposed to be seeing blood when I go to the bathroom. I knew that for sure. But no, all the Google searches I did wasn't giving me enough answers. Google was actually scaring me because it wasn't giving me the answers I need. And I was determined to find out what was going on because I knew that it was not all in my head.
Mm-hmm. And so, Misha, what type of training you think healthcare professionals should go through to be better advocates and better in having compassion?
I think more doctors need to have more empathy, but I think you need to have more doctors that listen. You have far too many doctors that doesn't actually listen. They hear you, but they're not listening to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a lot of doctors that want to rush through your visit, you know, get you in and get you out without addressing any of your needs, any of your concerns. And I'm big on writing down and taking notes to my appointments because we're human. We all forget. Mm-hmm. I think that writing down, you know, what's going on, or keeping a food journal or bathroom journal, or just all above, you know, having questions that you might need for your, you know, you might want to address with your doctor. I think all that stuff is important to get the results that you want.
Absolutely. And so, Misha, this question is, how should patients ensure that they feel respected, understood, and heard when interacting with providers, when accessing the healthcare system?
Always, always, always speak up for yourself. Don't take no for an answer. If one doctor don't listen, you keep going until you find that one that will. Because if you find that one that will, it's possibly another one out there that will listen to you as well. But you have to stand your ground and you have to advocate for yourself when no one else will.
And Misha, this question is loaded. There's a lot of things that are wrong with the system. But if there is any one thing that you feel can improve the healthcare system greatly, what would it be?
I think we should have access for Medicare. I think we should have medical health insurance for all. I think we should have it for all and everybody. I think everybody should have access to quality healthcare. I think it's needed. I think it's lacked in the community right now. I think it's lacked and just held up. But I believe that if they had adequate healthcare for the ones, you know, for everybody to actually get quality healthcare, I think that would make a big deal and a big, big difference.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% there. Access to healthcare is a human right and we should be upholding that. But unfortunately, our systems are flawed, our governments are flawed, and this is politics and power that come into play here. But Misha, if there is anyone wanting to share their story and they're unafraid to speak up or advocate or to tell anyone their story, what would you say to them?
I would say that you're not alone in this journey and that, you know, there's somebody out there that's just like you, that's just like me, that's just like, you know, your old self, that you're not alone. And everything that you're going through and your feelings, they're valid.
Beautifully said. And so, Misha, that is all the questions I have for you today. But I just want to thank you wholeheartedly for sharing your opinion, your perspective. And when patients are truly engaged in the healthcare system, when they speak and advocate for their healthcare priorities, we can actually push for greater inclusion, for greater awareness, for greater diversity, for patients to be respected. And I think patient advocacy is extremely important, not only for yourself, but for other patients. So I want to say continue doing what you are doing. You're doing an amazing job. You're incredible for taking on this job of inspiring others along with you. And I love how you mentioned that your diagnosis is a part of you, and although it does not define you or limit you, it has become a part and parcel of your life, and acceptance of that and moving forth is really inspiring to hear how you've managed to perceive and overcome all that you've had to go through. With this special series, we hope that the Behind Diagnosis Patient Special Series sheds light on the importance of listening to patients, their voices, and that over time, it will increase patient safety, health innovation, and transform care delivery in the clinic and beyond. So thank you so much, Misha, for being a part of this special series and for coming on to the PureMed podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me as a guest, and it's a pleasure.
I'd like to thank our sponsors, Hashtag Rising Youth, the Government of Canada, Canada Service Corps, and Taking It Global for supporting and funding the project. I'd also like to thank the incredible individuals, voices, and patients who appear on the series, and whose stories will guide medical education, clinical practice, and healthcare innovation. Listen in and listen now to the Behind Diagnoses Patient Special Series on the PureMed podcast to ensure change for a better world. Catch us on the next episode in conversation with another incredible patient advocate. And if you need more information, do not hesitate to email us at PureMedFoundation@gmail.com. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe, stay healthy.